Hi, everybody. Welcome to Queers and Soaps. I'm Tommy, and today I'm joined by my lovely co-host, Angel.
Hello.
We are back this week with Guiding Light, 1995. We watched episodes February 20th to February 28th, 1995. So I'll roll the credits and we'll get into it. So this was a total of 7 episodes, and it felt jam-packed. I don't know if it was because it was February sweeps, or if there was a new writer and he was just trying to wrap everything up. But I feel like every time I looked, I was like, oh shit, whoa, what's happening?
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering if it's just because of February sweeps.
Yeah.
I know that General Hospital is recently doing that, like wrapping stuff up with the new writers there. So I'm wondering if that's like the same stuff that's happening here and there and everywhere. So.
Yeah. I guess we should talk about the Grease stuff since that's so disconnected from everything else.
Yeah.
So in Grease, Alini, last we saw, what's his name? Is it Christos? It's Christos. See, I wasn't sure if they were saying Christos or Christoph. I'm like,
I looked it up because I was like, okay, first of all, I wanted to know who played them, which obviously I couldn't find that either, because I know you were trying to find it last time. And then when I looked it up in Eleni's bio on Soap Central, happy 30th anniversary, first of all. it's with a C, so it's Christos.
Christos, okay.
Yeah, so it's like the actor Christos Andrews, but with a C.
Okay. So he had demanded that she leave. He wasn't going to negotiate with her, but she didn't leave. She was like, "No, I'm staying." And apparently, it's foggy, and she can't get on the boat back to her island or whatever. But it manages to clear, and the sister ends up going to the bar or the tavern that used to be Eleni's family's for drink. I laughed when she was like, oh, the price of Ouzo has gone up. And I was like, girl, I was like, you don't even know. Come back in 30 years and let me know how much it costs.
Yes.
So I guess she gets a little drunk and she meets Frank and I don't really get a good vibe from her. I feel like she's a troublemaker, or she doesn't like Eleni.
Oh, I got so that.
Like she's like, oh, she's like, I can put a wedge between them. I'm gonna use her husband. But speaking of husbands, we find out that the secret that we heard about last week that she doesn't even know is that Eleni and him are married. How does she not know that they're married?
How do they like that their grandfathers marry them? Like.
But, like, why doesn't she know this? Did she think, like, they got divorced and the paperwork wasn't filed?
When did they get married?
Like, Carter didn't file
they
it?
They married his kids? That's disgusting.
Like, I don't understand why she doesn't know that they're married.
Yeah, and then would that invalidate her two marriages? Like, so remember, she's married to Frank, and then she was married to Alan Michael. So would that make both of those marriages invalid?
I don't know, because like if you get married outside of the country, does that invalidate the marriage?
Anybody who watches 90 Day Fiancé, please answer this question for us. I only know about it because of Big Ed, but.
But anyway, so they're married. She didn't know about it. Frank somehow gets the sister says that she'll bring Frank to his island to go find Christos and Eleni. He comes face to face with Christos. I don't remember what he said. Did he say that she left or she's sleeping? He gave some excuse why he couldn't see her. That she left?
He said she left. Yeah, he said that she left on the boat.
Okay. To basically shoo Frank away. Frank does not leave though.
He does.
So towards the end of these episodes, I got a little icky because it felt like a Sammy and EJ kind of situation. Yeah. I'll sleep with you if you give me what I want kind of situation. And I was like, ugh.
The coercion of it all.
Yeah.
I just said that very weird. I can't say the word. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the coercion.
Coercion. Yeah. Thank you.
I guess it's a little different because she brought it up. But in a way, it's the same because she's like, I'll give you what you want if you give me what I want. So it's icky.
Very icky.
And Frank's like hiding behind the door listening to all this. And I'm like, please don't misunderstand this. Please know that she's only doing this.
Because yeah, he's on like the balcony.
Yeah. Because when he first showed, like when we first saw him in the doorframe, I was like, I should rewind a little bit. There was a struggle. She was going to stab him. She got a knife.
Go, Lainey.
And he somehow got the upper hand. I felt like it was a little contrived, but she should have just cut him. But anyway, he got the knife away from her. And that's when we see Frank. And I'm like, of course, he's only going to hear half the conversation. So I thought he was going to like misunderstand what was happening. Like he was going to think she was really into him. But yeah, so we saw Frank. I thought that's what was going to happen. She goes off to the balcony and she kind of sees Frank. Oh, because Christos walked away and she's like, you need to get out of here before he's like, I'm so close to him getting to agree to what I want. I'm like, I don't think you are though.
Nah.
And Frank pretty much has to, you know, puff his chest out and he gets into a fight with Christos. And last we see, he kind of has him in a chokehold. Not a chokehold, but he has him like his arm behind his back. And he's demanding that they let them leave. And so I started thinking about this. I'm like, as far as I know, Greece does not have like a monarchy. Like there's no kings and queens. He's a wealthy family, but he can't hold them there legally. No. I don't think. But yeah, what are your thoughts on that situation?
I want to point something out that I found while I was doing my research, figuring out how this man's name is spelled. Mm-hmm. We are at the tail end, the very tail end of Melina Canacrides' run as Eleni. March 1st, the next episode is her last episode. Oh. So I'm wondering, and I did notice that like she got replaced with Wendy Kaplan. I wonder how much of that is related to her pursuing prime time, because I remember she was on NYPD Blue after this.
All right.
So,
maybe
yeah, one more episode with Melina, and then about 6 days later, it's Jennifer Rozelle.
Oh, really? Hmm.
So, this is Melina's last storyline on Guiding Light.
Right. So we get her for one more episode, and then
March 1st. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm sad.
Maybe we should have started in 94.
I love this. And this is our first. Well, okay, Dylan, obviously, but and well, Gabriel kind of counts. But
you said that with
this
scene.
This is our third exit in less than 2 months.
Well, I feel like we're gearing up for more because I don't know. We'll get to it later, but I don't like the way the dialogue sounds with Jilly. I feel like California is happening, and I'm like, but we'll get to that when we get to that story.
Yeah.
also this week watching it, not to dive into Jilly's story right away, but seeing Jilly, I was remembering that she was on Passions now that I know who she is, and I was thinking about all of like the big name actors that went to Passions, and I'm like, they were probably like, what the fuck did I sign up for? Because they got a few like known actors, and I was like, I guess a paycheck's a paycheck.
Hey, look.
Like, they had Louis Sorrell. They had Louis Sorrell. They had Robin Strasser. They had John Riley. Like, they had name actors. They were probably like, what the fuck?
No, but John Riley was a recast for a very important, sad reason. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, back to Guiding Light.
And then Amelia Marshall. I can't talk today. Amelia Marshall was on All My Children for a while too.
Who's Amelia Marshall?
Who played Jilly?
That's Jilly.
Yeah, Jilly.
Oh, I didn't know her name.
Yeah. She was on she was on All My Children for a while. And this was after Guiding Light.
Really?
Oh my gosh, why am I forgetting her name? Oh my gosh, her character's name. I think she was a Kiefer. I think she was a Keith Hamilton cop's sister on the show.
I don't know all my children that well at all, actually.
Oh my gosh. And that was the era when I was really watching it. That was the shit. All my children in 98.
So it is the next morning after Holly basically begged Roger to let it go if he wants them to have a chance together. And he had agreed. Sort of. But now it's the next morning and he's like, you know, I can't. He's like, I can't do that. So it's basically the same conversation just over and over again. Like her saying, like, you know, if you want us to have a chance, you need to let this go. The dialogue, though, it's very like, it's almost like she admitted there was somebody else because he knows to look for somebody else. She said she was faithful. He said he was faithful, and she said, so was I. You weren't, but you also were on a break, I guess, because you thought he slept with Alexandra. So.
And then you freaking, not that I like the character of Tanji. Don't get me wrong. I'm not feeling Tanji.
I don't really have strong feelings for or against her. I feel bad that if like she got a lot of hate mail, because that's sad.
I would never do that to an actor, but like, I don't know. I'm not feeling her. It's not that I don't like the character, it's just that I'm not feeling her either. But you freaking send Tanji out of the country on an assignment. You freaking fired her and rehired her, like, all the time, just to keep this affair at bay. Like, right. It was not even an affair. It was like a one night. Well, no. It was a one night stand at the time, and then it became an affair. But Tanji,
it was a one night sexual encounter, but it's kind of more of an emotional affair now because they clearly have feelings for each other.
Yeah.
So she's basically alluding that there was something did happen, but she was faithful. I'm like, that contradicts that. Like,
it's
incongruent.
It's incongruent. Like, it doesn't go with each other.
So he's a dog with a bone. He's like, not gonna let this go. She gets a phone call from Fletcher that Tanji's back in town, and I'm like, here we go. So she goes bolting to the airport. She's got to meet her at the door. And this is pre-9/11, so the security wasn't as fast, so she went right to the gate probably.
Oh yeah.
And she's basically like reiterating, she's like, you're not gonna say anything, right? Because she's like, bitch, I'll send you out the country again.
I will put you back on that plane and put you to another country. Like, that's how much I don't want you here.
she kind of says Roger knows there was someone, but he doesn't know everything, and that they're back together to kind of, I guess, keep her at bay. Mm-hmm. That they're working things out, which she seems happy about. I guess she just wants Roger to be happy. When you had texted me, can we watch the one more episode? As we were going further into the week, she even went to Tanji's like apartment and like had this conversation all over again. And Roger was like lurking outside, and I was like, oh my god, is this where he finds out?
I was That's
like,
what I'm gonna do.
But Tanji went outside and saw him, right? So the editing in some of these episodes was weird. I kept thinking, like, did they like have a commercial? Like, did something get interrupted, or is this just how it was edited? Because she made eye contact with Roger, didn't say anything about Roger, and then next we see them, she's back inside talking to Holly. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I felt like I missed something.
Heck, I thought he found out, but I think so. Full disclosure, as I was watching this, not that Guiding Light is boring, but you know, I'm recovering from, I'm between jobs. So I was catching up on sleep, and I woke up and it was like, oh my god, I skipped. So I had to rewind back.
That happened to me once also. I fell asleep during the third or fourth episode and had to rewatch it. Again, not because it was boring, but I had a rough week. Like, work was really busy, so I'm tired. but it was almost like it's almost like Tanji knew he left, because they were actually openly talking about the affair. Mm-hmm. And she didn't look like she was hesitant to say what it was. So I'm like, she must have shushed him away or something. I don't know. Or she saw him leave. I don't know. That's why I feel like the editing was weird, or maybe there was like a news interruption. Who knows?
It was OJ. Blame it on OJ.
It was 95. It could have been. Oh, also the credits. We got the long credits back like sporadically. Like there was some
Yeah.
sprinklings of the short, but then we saw the old, like the long ones.
So it's funny because like every time that the opening credits would be like I would hear it in the music. You can hear it in the music when it's the short version. And we're not talking 1997 short version. We're talking like the 1995 short version, which was crap. Like just basically the bumper and then like the bump the mid program bumper, which if you
Yeah.
don't know what that means, it's like we
And
will
then just
continue in part to a guiding
the
light. Yes.
light going around.
So I could hear. I was like, okay, are they cool? Okay, I was listening. I was like, okay, are they going to play the short version or long version? I was like, oh, the long version. And then I noticed that I didn't notice this before. I always thought that that opening started with Eleni, but it actually starts with Nadine. You have it goes by so quick that you have to really look at it. But Nadine starts the opening out, and then it's Eleni.
So, I don't know if you could answer this because I don't know like actual names. But there's an actress that I see in the credits who looks like somebody from One Life to Live. I don't know the character's name. She had a British accent, and I believe she was with, is it Sam Rappaport? Who did DePaiva play? The guy DePaiva. Cassie DePaiva.
Oh, Max,
Max, Max. So it
Max,
was the early, she was on in the early 90s. She had a British accent, and I think she was paired with Max. I
she
don't
was
like
paired
I
with
don't.
Max in the 80s. This is Fiona Hutchinson. She played Jenna, and just like her and Dylan, they're still in the opening despite them being long
Oh,
gone.
so it is her.
So it is her. Yeah,
Okay,
she played
that
Jenna.
every time I see her, I'm like, that looks like the girl from or the woman from One Life to Live. And I'm like,
She
but
played
I don't know
she
anything
played
about her.
Jenna. She was last seen on a Chris's episode. I might have mentioned this before. No, I mentioned this on Twitter because I actually posted like a because I watched the 1994 Christmas episode just for context for the 1995 Christmas episode because I always watch that episode in during Christmas or the holidays if you want to be correct. She leaves in 1994 pregnant with Buzz's child, who is his Coop. Henry Cooper Bradshaw. During the Christmas episode of 1994, she calls Vanessa. Vanessa and her are they're besties, they're best friends. And she said, "I gave birth to Coop." And this is the last time we see her until I think late 1996, early 1997.
Oh, so she comes back.
So she does come back. Guiding Light admittedly is bad at updating openings, updating their openings. So I didn't blame them for now at the time when I was watching in 19, 1997, 1997, when they shortened the opening, I was like, oh man, because like I remember way in the past, my mom used to watch Guiding Light sporadically, but in the past, I would that opening was just my favorite opening when she would watch it, and I barely remember a lot of the episodes from when she was watching, but when I started watching it on my own. It was like maybe early 1997. I think the switch happened and I was disappointed. But then, first of all, they keep changing the music, which, yes, they still did that. They did that on My Guiding Light 2, which is the opening in the 80s. That entire opening was just like you have the original version, and you have the remix, and you have the melancholy version, and you have this version. They were they tried to do that with Hold On to Love, which is what this opening is called. And I think it failed. I think also they had too much change behind the scenes. And then when Paul Rauch came in, they were like, okay, fine, we'll just shorten the opening until the end. So,
Well, one thing about Guiding Light, they weren't afraid to try new things,
yeah.
even if it was a flop.
Spaghetti.
Well, before we go back to Guiding Light, one thing I read on Twitter this week, Steve Burton was never credited in his last run on GH. I think I read that he never made the credits from 2019 to 21. I And I'm like, really? That seems odd.
The opening credits?
Yeah. Oh. Like the ones that they have now where they just like flip the picture. They said that.
Oh my gosh. I never even noticed that.
I read that. And I was like, really? I was like, that seems odd. One of your biggest stars never made the credits. But anyway.
Pictures.
Like, you have to look into that. But back to Guiding Light. So totally forgot this was happening, that Matt and Vanessa were throwing a party for their relationship.
Hey, look, it happened so quick, I thought it wasn't going to happen.
I totally forgot that they even like mentioned they were having a party from the last time that they were out for Valentine's Day, I think it was.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, right. It's basically the whole cast is invited, except for Roger and Holly. I think they were the only two that didn't show up.
Yeah.
And Tangie.
Oh, Tangie, of course, yeah.
Wait, did she? No, she...
She wasn't there.
No, she wasn't there.
She is important to a single scene, but, like, we'll get to that.
Yeah, and I was like, wow, I miss those days when the whole cast would be able to go to a party. I never thought about budgets, that they would actually have to pay them to have all those actors there. I thought it was just, oh, you're on the show, you get to be at the party.
you get to be in the party. You get to be in the party. Skips over the person. You get to be in the party.
Oh, there was an important scene with Tangie at the airport.
Yeah, I didn't want to mention it, but like,
that's what was before the party.
Yes, it was before the party, yep.
There was a woman. Apparently she just got back from France. And she said she lost her wallet somewhere. And Tangie gives her like $20. And she says it's for like a cab or something, but she ends up buying cigarettes with it.
And she smokes under the no smoking sign.
She smokes everywhere. And I was like, oh, we're still in that era where it was kind of okay to still smoke. Even though everybody's kind of like... she ends up showing up at Vanessa's house. Whose house is this?
Wait. She was at the Fifth Street Diner first.
Oh, right. She met Matt.
What do they call... Oh, my gosh. What do they call that place? Was it Meals and Wheels? We'll just call it the Fifth Street Diner because I looked it up on Soap Central, and they call it the Meals and Wheels Diner, but I'm just going to call it the Fifth Street Diner.
Yeah, I like that name better, Fifth Street Diner.
Yeah.
Right, because she met Matt there, but again, she's smoking there, and everybody's like, oh, you can't smoke in here, and I'm like, oh. I'm like, I remember diners used to have, like, smoking sections.
I went to IHOP, with the IHOP as a kid, and my grandmother would always pick the smoking section
Some restaurants would have like glass walls, others it would just be open, and it's like,
what's it was open, point? Yeah, it was open. At IHOP. Oh my gosh, I remember IHOP, like, the IHOP I went to, I'm sure your co-host, who also lives in Pennsylvania, may know this. It was in Springfield, actually. A town called Springfield. Well, actually, close to Springfield. And it would look like a house. And the building is now like a car dealership, and it still looks like the same house.
Oh, yeah. The IHOPs here look like that, too. Yeah. A lot of them are closed, but like, I'm like, when they've become... Actually, we had a Pizza Hut.
Yes!
That Pizza Hut! Something, and I'm like, it still looks like the frame of a Pizza Hut. It's just something that is painted differently.
They tore down the Pizza Hut in that was across the street from the IHOP, and it's now a Wawa, so.
Oh.
Kind of sad.
So yeah, she's smoking at the diner. She ends up falling asleep in the booth. Nadine doesn't like her. She's like, she can't wait to get her out of there. She meets Matt, and she mentions just being in town to basically milk some money out of her parents and then hit the road again, not knowing who Matt is. So at the party, everybody's there. Josh, he looks like he's healing. He's still a little limpy.
Yeah.
But Annie's there.
Annie's there.
Yes. Annie's really good with the kids.
She is.
I feel like, so We're getting them in like small bursts. And every once in a while we'll see their dates, but like we just get like these small scenes. And I almost feel like this is supposed to be their happy time. So when they're like a real couple, that's when the drama's gonna start.
Oh yeah, 100%. Yes.
Probably in April. What else happened at this party before the reveal happened? I guess nothing.
Not much, no.
So this woman ends up going to Vanessa's house. Oh, that's what I was saying. Whose house is this? Am I right in saying Vanessa's? Does she own it?
Let's just say it's the Lewis Chamberlain house.
Lewis Chamber. Okay.
Yeah, let's just say that. You can say it's Vanessa's house, you can say it's Josh's house, you can say it's Mindy's house, you can say it's Henry's house. It's the Lewis Chamberlain house.
Because I was watching the clone storyline and I remember it was like it looked like Josh lived there
Yeah,
and
Josh and Reva
Cassie
live.
maybe.
Yeah, so from what I understand, I think at some point I'm not going to spoil too much. But for whatever reason, and I know the reason, but I'm not gonna say it. For whatever reason, the house is given to Josh and Reva.
Oh, okay. Oh, rewinding a little bit, you telling me that Buzz had another kid? He has a lot of kids.
Yeah, so Buzz does have another kid. Yep. He actually has, so in total, just to kind of fast forward in the timeline, he has Rocky. I'm gonna go backwards. He has Rocky, Henry, Lucy, Harley and Frank. So he has five kids.
And Coop.
Oh, I Henry. Oh my gosh, Coop. Yeah, Henry, I called Henry Coop. I have Coop
Oh,
is
that's the same
Henry.
person.
Same person. Yeah, Henry
Oh,
Cooper
okay.
Bradshaw.
So
So
five.
Jenna and Vanessa are friends. Like I said, she named Coop after Buzz and then after Vanessa's dad Henry.
Okay. Wow, five kids. That's a lot. It's almost like Marlena. Marlena has
And then, oh, and
Sammy,
Rocky is.
Eric, Belle. I guess you can count DJ.
Yeah, DJ. Poor DJ.
Oh, I guess that's it, right? Four. And then if you count Carrie and then at one
If you
point Cassie and Rex. At one point she had like seven
well,
kids.
Brady kind of counts because
Who?
Bella's dead.
Who?
Brady.
Oh, Brady. Wait, did I count
He
him?
kind of
Maybe.
counts.
Yeah, eight. Wow. Marlena almost had eight kids at once when they rewrote Cassie and Rex.
And
But
then Rocky is actually Jenna's husband's child, but like Coop, not Coop, Buzz claims him. So, because like the
did
because
Buzz
Jenna
actually ever
never
raise
knows
any of these
that.
kids from ch like birth, or did they all come in like mid, like around teens?
Somebody can help me out with this, but we're gonna let's focus on Lucy for a little bit. Lucy, so he would so from what I read, and somebody can, like I said, somebody can help me out with this too. Buzz went off to Vietnam. At some point he left the family when he was supposed to come back from Vietnam, and he was with Lucy's mom, who I don't think we ever met Lucy's mom. When he came back to Springfield, because when he came back to Springfield, came back to town, first they had to play that beat with like, oh, you left, you left Frank and Harley all by themselves and that sort of thing. Nadine actually also left them because she wanted to be a movie star. So they were basically orphaned together.
Oh.
The way that they found out that Buzz wasn't dead was that, the Vietnam Memorial. They actually filmed it at the Vietnam Memorial. They actually filmed a reveal at the
Oh.
Vietnam Memorial. Harley looked for Buzz's name and it wasn't there, meaning
Really?
that he was alive.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Huh. That's interesting.
Yeah.
So this woman shows up at the party and Vanessa says it's Dinah.
Dinah Adele Chamberlain Marlar, yes.
Now, it sounds like from what I got from the dialogue, she Vanessa gave her up for adoption. Did we see her as a teenager before she went away to school at all?
Yes, in the 80s. She was with Cameron Stewart, who was played by oh my gosh, Ian Ziering from before 90210.
Oh, really?
Yep. So
So
he was a, so Ian Ziering was a teenager for a good 10 years.
so did it wasn't this actress that played her as a teenager? Was it a different
No,
actress?
it was first it was I'm gonna it's I'm probably switching the two, but it they were played by Jennifer Gotti and Paige Turco in the 80s.
Oh,
I forgot who was first. I think Gotti was first and then Turco was second, or Gotti was second and Turco was first. I don't know. I saw it and then I just didn't retain the information. Help me out in the comments too about that. But
gotcha.
yeah, I don't want to go too much into Dinah's backstory because it's a lot. Let's just say it involved the circus.
Oh.
Yeah. And a
Yeah.
lot of abandonment.
Okay. So she's lighting up again and everybody's kind of making faces. She has the cab still running, waiting for her for this whole party. She kind of comes off a little pretentious.
Oh,
Like
yeah.
she's like, but the minute she sees her father, she like becomes American and she's like, Daddy, and she's like, she drops that whole facade. This is how I found out. This is how I found out that Ross is her father. Didn't know
I
that.
love when Ross and Dinah reunited. Like, I love when she ran to him and jumped into his arms. Ah, that was so good.
Yeah, I gotta admit, I'm not really liking this whole facade she puts on. But I did, Ross did make me like her a little bit. I was also trying to gauge who she was gonna have a rivalry with. I was just like, I was like, I could see it happening with Blake,
Yeah, it's gonna happen
the
with Blake.
affections of her father.
I think
And
it's gonna happen with Blake.
then I'm like, who's gonna be her woman? And then I'm like, ooh, I was like, she is young, but she's an adult. I was like, maybe she's gonna try to have an affair with Matt. Like, I was like trying to like see who she could be paired with.
The fact that I already know, I'm not gonna mention anything, but she was with the person that she might be marrying later on this year.
Oh.
He has already shared scenes with her future husband. So,
Oh, I'm not even trying to guess. I'm just gonna
yeah. Because around the time when I first watched it, like when my mom was watching it, Dinah was already married.
It's funny because like I haven't watched a lot of Gina Tognoni in the role, but I just can't picture her acting like this. So I'm like, Gina, I mean, she very well could have, but I feel like the character probably evolved a lot before Gina took over.
Oh yeah. She evolved and then
But I was like trying to picture Gina acting like this, and I'm like, I can't like picture her doing this.
have you watched her as Kelly on all not All My Children? Wow, One Life to Live.
I've seen scenes. I mostly just know her from her stint as Phyllis, which I know probably controversial, but I prefer her as Phyllis than.
Not no 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 no. A lot of people are tired of I think even Michelle Stafford was tired of Phyllis.
But oh, so she sees Matt, and I feel like she has the same conversation with him twice. She like reiterates both times. I was just joking around about the whole milking my parents for money. She's like, but don't tell my mom that because she doesn't understand my humor.
She has French humor. Oh, oui.
Yeah. But she says it twice. And I'm like, you're putting a spotlight on this. I'm like, the first time, like, if you said that to me, I would be like, oh, okay. But if you're like doubling down on it, I'd be like, why are you bringing this up again? So I'm like, you're doing too much. Rein it in a little bit. Vanessa thinks that she's going to end up staying at the house, but I guess Dinah thinks that Ross is an easier target, so she wants to stay with him.
Well,
Plus, I
then
don't think she likes
also,
Vanessa as much as she likes Ross.
oh yeah, she has huge mommy issues when it comes to Vanessa. Because Vanessa was the one who gave her away. Ross didn't know about Dinah for a while, for years, I think. And this was preluding to the 80s. This is the 80s, 80s Dinah. So
Gotcha.
She always had issues with Vanessa. She warmed up to Ross more because Ross, it wasn't Ross's fault that she was given away.
Yeah.
It was Vanessa's fault. I hate to say that, but yeah.
When they get back to Ross's house, apparently the cab costs $180 plus tip.
Wow, what a time to be alive.
Right.
I feel like that would be a lot more. I mean, right. Like, when it rained and you look at Lyft or Uber, the price is skyrocket. So
I know. And apparently she packed everything, which makes me think she has no intent of going back to France, but who knows?
Nope. She has no intent to go back to France.
Also, she made like a mysterious phone call to somebody, I think, in France.
Jean-Luc.
It's always a Jean-Luc. Wasn't that Jean-Luc?
Yes, Jean-Luc. I'm gonna shoot you, Sheridan.
And I don't know if he's a con artist and she's slightly a con artist, but she basically says she's gonna get the money. Or maybe she owes money to somebody. Who knows? Well, you probably know, but I don't.
I her beginning story I'm not like as well versed in, but I just got the feeling that they're both con artists.
Yeah, so she has a lot of suitcases. It basically takes up the whole living room.
Yeah.
She says she's still on like Paris time, so she's like, she's probably gonna stay up all night, and they're like, well, help yourself to the kitchen and, you know, the TV, whatever. She ends up going out. And again, this is where I feel like it got a little like the editing, maybe, but the next episode, it's like the next morning, she's sneaking back into the house. And there's dialogue that implies that she had breakfast with Roger. Did we see that, or did I fall asleep?
Yeah, you might have fallen asleep because we are shown Dinah and Roger having, I guess, breakfast because it was still dark outside. So it was shown.
Okay, then I must have dozed with that part. I guess it didn't rewind far enough. So what was the point of that? Was she trying to get money out of him?
I forgot what the Roger angle was, because there is definitely the Roger angle that he was upset that like Holly could have Holly was having an affair.
He talked to her about that?
Yeah, but they don't know each other. They absolutely do not know each other. Like, Roger was dead at that when Dinah was in town in the 80s.
So did they just like happen upon each other and had breakfast?
They just happened
together?
Upon each other. Like, Dinah was staring at Roger from afar.
Was it at the diner again?
No. It was Towers, I think. Oh, okay. It was Towers. Or wherever rich people hang out in Springfield. I know it wasn't the country club, because the country club comes later. So okay. Then they have a conversation. I think, they don't know each other's names. So, in fact, nobody is I'm skipping ahead a little bit, but nobody contacts Roger about having breakfast with Dinah, but the reporter contacts Dinah about having breakfast with Roger.
Okay.
So.
I gotta say, I think I may have said this the last time. Mindy's annoying me.
Oh yeah.
I like Nick a lot, and I don't know if that's just because I like Vincent Irizarry, but I feel bad for him, and I'm just like, oh, just leave her alone. Like, just find somebody else. She's super obsessed with them getting this child and not working on her marriage at all. Like, she's hyper focused on getting this child, and I get it because it's something that she's always wanted. But Nick is like clocking this, and he actually at the party tells her, don't say anything because you don't want to jinx it. Like, we don't officially have the baby yet. And she can't help herself. I think he hears her talking to Josh about it.
Yeah. I understand, because Josh is family.
Yeah.
But then if she was talking to somebody else, like who's not family in this town that she's not alone, maybe Matt. If she was talking to like Matt about it, then,
like,
then
really I would get it. yeah. And he later like mentions it, and she's like, she just brushes off. She's like, I just can't help myself. I'm so excited. I think he even overheard her saying something along the lines of like, she can't like even think about her marriage right now. She has to worry about this baby, and that kind of makes Nick's antennas go up. So apparently he contacted the agency and withdrew the paperwork for this
This
to
was
happen.
after, so I remember this because this was after he and Mindy were in bed, and they have a conversation about like, oh, well, do you want this marriage to work? So something along those lines, and she was basically like implying no. When she and he was even saying that like he called, not no, sorry, he didn't call her. They called Nick saying that
It was
that
approved.
they weren't have no, it was denied.
Oh, it was denied.
It was denied. And Mindy
Okay.
got really upset. And then that's when Nick called the agency is saying we're withdrawing it. And
Wow.
wait a minute. I was at the bus stop coming from a doctor's appointment, and the way my mouth dropped, was like, wait a minute. So that got me a little invested in the storyline. A little, like that got me invested in the storyline. I'm like, okay, when is she gonna find out that he basically double crossed her? Like
Right.
he pulled a David Hayward move.
He did and he didn't, like, because
Yeah, you're
I'm
right.
still on his side, because he, I don't
Yeah, I was like, wait a minute,
know.
because I was like, when? First of all, in my mind, I was like, well, when did they call? We would have seen if they called.
Right.
And then when he basically was like, okay, well, Mindy doesn't want me, let me just withdraw the application.
Right. And this is all after she like bought a bunch of clothes for the baby and was like showing
Yeah.
them off. Yeah, so that was pretty much it for that story.
And then they well, they had a moment where they were like, I don't know where the hell this. They were in front of like a brownstone. And they were basically like solidifying the fact that their relationship was not going to work anymore. So,
I
and they
think.
called like a child, and a mom and a dad, a child like basically taking their first steps and walking towards like their father, which
Yeah.
I thought that was a little sweet. And then they basically were just like, okay, this is not going to work. And they left each
I think
other.
she might be leaving the show soon.
Oh yeah, I think they both are.
No, I think I read he stays until 96.
Oh right, yeah, you're right, you're right, you're right, you're right.
But I think she's leaving soon.
Yeah, I th yeah,
Or
I
I read she
think.
leaves in 95. I don't know when in 95.
Yeah, I think this would be the hold on, because it's Krista, I think Kimberly. There was another one between her and between Kimberly and Barbara, so she would have been the fourth Mindy.
Oh, wow.
So they like because there was one oh my gosh, Anne Hamilton, I think her name was. There was a Mindy in between I think her name was Kimberly, the one who was Mindy when Roger had an affair
Oh,
with Mindy. And
okay.
then Alexandra was also was played by Beverly McKenzie at the time. And that was yes.
So I guess they were living at the Lewis house because that's where they shared the bed. But then now Nick's back with Fletcher because he was getting ready for this news.
No, they were living in the Spalding.
Oh, they were saying, oh, at the
They were
Spalding?
staying at Spalding because remember when they
Oh, okay. That makes more
when
sense. Yeah.
yeah. So I'm guessing that Mindy's back with Josh, Vanessa, the full house with
Right.
with Mara,
Which
Shane,
is the
Rufus
reason
Rose.
why Dinah says she can't stay there because it's a full house. So she's like, I'll just
That yeah, and then also Matt. And remember Matt is under the same Matt. Matt doesn't live there, but Matt does visit a lot, and you know that Matt is going to expose Dinah at some point. So Dinah was like, okay, let me just go over to Ross's house.
We briefly saw Bridget because she met her at the party, and Bridget almost was like, "Who? What the hell is that?" It
Then
was
like
funny. I'm starting to come around to Bridget. Remember, I was like, I don't like this like angry Bridget. I like this Bridget. I feel like she's like coming out of her depression or her
Yeah.
anger. What's next? Oh, so the end of the, well, the end of these episodes, not the week, was this media award show that apparently Jilly's up for an award, and apparently there was some offer, or there might be some offer for her to possibly move to California and work mm-hmm. there, that she hasn't told Sid yet. Mm. I laughed. We saw, what's her name? The mom.
Vivian.
We saw Vivian. And I laughed when she got excited when she saw David and he just walked right by her, because I forgot that he like disowned her. And I was just like, oh, right. I was like, stay petty. I like this. And the dad tries to like have a conversation with him about it. And he's like, that's just your mom. You know, she only does things because she cares. And he's just like, nope.
I like Sid's conversation with David. Like, I don't know. I think because I'm African-American and I don't see a lot of African Americans talking to each other on soaps, I just mm-hmm. loved it so much. Like, it was just like a scene with just Sid and David, and
yeah,
basically saying like, "Oh, I didn't like you, but now I like you." And you know, and Sid was like, "Wait, I love this part." Sid was like, "Oh, well, tickets have been out for like weeks," and he's like, "Oh, I just walked in like I own the place." Oh my gosh, like, because let's be real.
Remember when I thought David and Dylan were boyfriends? Because they hugged goodbye.
Let's just be real. If anybody my skin tone darker or even a little lighter walked into a country club like they owned the place, cops would be called. Like, mm-hmm. come on. Like, I love David. Like, this is just everything to me.
He's probably well known. Their family freaks yeah. him, so they probably recognize him.
He was, yeah, because I think if I remember correctly, from like seeing clips and just like reading the history of David, I think Jilly was accused of killing somebody, and then David was accused of killing somebody. They both had a trial, and they were both like, you know, they both were acquitted. They both got off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. That's funny that Vivian is so stuck on appearances, considering they have like a murky past. I really enjoy seeing their scenes. And I guess David's the one that kind of makes it aware that there is a possible opportunity in California. Mm-hmm. So he's kind of side-eyeing the boss that's there mm-hmm. and any mention of California. Jilly ends up winning the first award, and I'm like, oh, I'm like, this is one of those scenarios where everybody in the cast wins the awards. Kind of like the popular kids on a teen drama. They all are prom king and queen, and they win everything. Yeah. So Jilly thanks Roger, which forgot for a second she even works for Roger, and then she thanks yeah. Polly. Rewinding a little bit, Roger is so petty.
Yes.
He wrote a typewriter for Holly at the awards to put under her program, making it look like it's from Fletcher. It said, "Roger knows about us, meet me at my place tonight." And he had this whole fantasy of her going and him following her to find out who the guy was. We only saw the back of the guy's head, so this is who Roger's imagining this guy is.
Yeah, it wasn't
funny. And I was like, kind of looks like Jack Abbott. Like the little
Jack Abbott.
And she's like making out with him in this fantasy that he's having, and he pulls a gun, and I'm like, is he really gonna shoot the guy?
Remember, he's in the firing range, which is the second instance of like Roger going someplace to let off some steam.
And then we did have that whole like meditation thing where he was imagining a magic yes. knife. He's like, a violent person.
In a firing range. What's next? Axe throwing?
Oh, to really rewind all the way back to the beginning of what we watched, the conversation he was having with Holly, I laughed because he's like, I preemptively forgive you. And I was like, the minute she tells you what it is, you're going to be like, slut.
Oh my my gosh, that reminds me of so this actually was a scene that got Michael Zaslow his Emmy, written by Patrick Mulcahy too, where they were at the country club after this was shortly after Maureen died.
Okay.
And Roger was just acting a fool like he always does. You know, if a day ending in Y, Roger acts. So he confronts Holly like outside of like on the balcony of the country club. Mm-hmm. And he was like, he said, I went to the paper, you weren't there. I went somewhere, you weren't there. I went to the paper where they basically treat me like primordial ooze. And then he said, you can make love to me, but the idea of returning a phone call is beyond you. Oh, God, I love I watched it. That's another episode I just watch over and over again. Because so if you're not aware, I'm sure everybody is aware, but Michael Zaslow had ALS. And he passed away.
Oh, he wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, ALS. He basically was forced off of Guiding Light due to his ALS. And if you're watching the episodes of 1997, you can kind of tell that he's kind of, it's sad. He's really sad.
He's deteriorating a little bit.
That it's happening. He got forced off the show. The executive producer in charge of production basically called him a wheezing old man. Yep. It's out there. Wow. Jill Farren Phelps, in one of the moves that I can side with her, she was at One Life to Live at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so Michael Zaslow's ALS wasn't as bad as what was portrayed on One Life to Live. Basically, she was like, okay, you played a character in the 1980s called David Rinaldi between your stints at Guiding Light. Let's bring him back with ALS, but you basically are like, so you know how Stephen Hawking has like the wheelchair with the
mm-hmm.
So they basically did that with David Rinaldi, Michael Zaslow's character.
Okay.
And he played the character until he died.
Okay.
So he was only on there for maybe like less than a year, and then the character, well, they wrote the character off. I don't know if they even like gave him an exit, like even like a talking exit, like a David went back to rehab or something like that. Okay. But he died in 1998, so
wow. I didn't know that Jill Farren Phelps ever was at One Life.
Yeah, it was kind of a... You remember Rappaport's, right?
Yeah.
That was her.
Oh, really? Okay.
And then, so that goes to say that in early 1998, a little after Michael Zaslow passed, they didn't have a new episode. They reran an episode, the episode I mentioned where he says you can make love to me, but the idea of returning a phone call is beyond you. Uh-huh. They re-aired that episode because it introduced Maureen Garrett, basically saying like, this is Michael Zaslow passed away. This is an episode that won him an Emmy in 1993, and we're just going to replay it.
Okay.
And then it also bookended it with Maureen Garrett. So.
Okay. So at the award show, Nick and Fletcher have like a private conversation, and he tells him that he was telling what's his name? The son. Fletcher's son.
Ben.
That he was having a conversation with Ben, and he was basically telling him how he may not be an affectionate guy, but he always stands up for what's right, and he always like attacks something that's wrong or whatever. Mm-hmm. And this gives Fletcher the courage to basically be like, nope, gotta tell Roger right now what's going on. Which I get, but like, you're not the only one involved in this. Like, mm-hmm. You really should talk to Holly about this before just doing it, because you're about to blow her life up pretty much.
Yeah, basically. But side note, I keep forgetting that Fletcher has a son named Ben. Like when he pops in, it's like, oh wait, but he does have a son named Ben. He was later played by Matt Bomer, who went on.
Yeah, I'll never remember his name until Matt Bomer shows up.
Yeah, but and then I vaguely remember he was in the 1995 Christmas episode. I was like, who's this kid? And I'm like, wait, this is Ben, because they wore the same coat.
Oh, speaking of kids, we saw Bill.
Bill, yeah.
And Vanessa was like, "Oh, your sister Dinah's back," and he seemed excited about that. So, if she was a teenager in the 80s, she doesn't look like she could be older than 25 now. He probably doesn't really have a relationship with her because
I'm
he's
trying
like
to remember when.
13.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember when Bill was born. I don't remember.
Not that that really makes a
Not that that
difference because
matters, but
ages in soap operas is always mixed up.
yeah, because I mean, Guy
They'll
in White
create like a
Fellows.
fake backstory that they used to do something together that he remembers
Guy
to bond over.
in White got a little weird with like, and I understand the reason why it got weird with like ages and stuff like that towards the end. I feel like this is pretty consistent with like what we're like what because like Bill is supposed to be older than Mara and Shane, which that makes a lot of sense. I think Ben and Michelle and Bill are supposed to be around the same age, but
Yeah.
we never really see them together. We see
We
Bill
did see.
and Michelle, but not Ben.
But yeah, I just wanted to bring up that quick little scene. But back to the award show. Roger keeps like eyeing his little note that he put because Holly like switched her seat because she didn't want to sit next to Fletcher, and he's like, damn it. Foil again. So he makes the guy that's like sitting there like put it by her program. Fletcher makes Nick tell Roger that he wants to speak to him outside to tell him everything about Holly, and he's like, he can't tell me anything that I don't know about Holly. It's almost like he doesn't even view Fletcher as a threat. So, like there his relationship, like it's not Fletcher. It can never be him.
Yeah, because like the honestly, somebody who has a lot of attention to detail as myself, I would have been suspicious about the fact that Holly wanted to switch seats with the guy because she was sitting next to Fletcher. I was like, wait a minute, huh? Let me see.
Yeah, I would have too. I'm like, that's weird. Why'd she do that? Nick goes back to Fletcher and says he doesn't want to come. So he kind of like he walks off, and then Jilly and Sid come outside, and he brings up the whole California thing. And this is where I kind of got the vibe. I was like, oh, I was like, this feels like an exit story for Jilly, and I was like, I don't want to lose her. I like her. I
Love Jilly.
don't know if I'm right, but I remember you saying there was like a mass exodus this year. So
There's
I'm
a
like,
mass exodus,
oh.
and some people come back, so
Okay.
or enter the show. I don't. Yeah,
Yeah.
so
I don't want to lose her.
don't want to lose her either.
So Holly reads the note, and I guess she goes to look for Fletcher. And how did Roger end up outside? Oh, Fletcher just went and grabbed him, right? Is that what
Yeah,
happened?
that's what
He was
happened.
like, fuck this, I'm just gonna get him myself.
Yeah,
And Holly ends up winning an award, but because she's not at the table, Nick and Tangie go up and accept the award. He's like, obviously, he's like, obviously, she's not Holly, and I'm not who was the other one?
Fletcher.
Oh, I'm not Fletcher. He's like, ironically, he's like, they weren't there the night of the fire either. I thought that was a funny joke. So he accepts the award for them. And outside, Fletcher's like, it's me. I'm the guy. And we see Holly kind of like standing by a door frame, hearing everything go down. And I'm like, oh shit. I was like, of
And
course
that's a
it's gonna
cliffhanger and a
So yeah, jam-packed week, week and two episodes.
Yeah.
Did I miss anything you wanted to mention?
What was I gonna mention? Hold on, there was something like the tip of my mind. Oh, when I mean this is that this is worth being skipped over, but like just the interactions that Dinah has with Blake. Where she was like, oh yeah, like don't talk to me until I had two cups of coffee. I think it was like three cups of coffee and a shower. And then she just walks off.
Yeah, you can tell Blake's trying to like bite her tongue and behave because she just got here and it's her husband's daughter. But
And then there
that's not gonna
was
last so long.
yeah. And then there was an argument between well not yeah, you could call it an argument between Vanessa and Ross about Dinah.
Yes.
Yes, a whole argument.
Which, because I didn't know that Ross was her father until she was like, Daddy, seeing that, I was like, ooh, I was like, there seems to be a lot of, like, resentment there. Mm-hmm. Whole history I didn't know about.
Yep.
Which I could see, because she hid the fact that he had a daughter, right? Mm-hmm. So I could see a lot of resentment there. So not related to this week at all, but I've been meaning to ask you this, and I keep forgetting every time we do Guiding Light. So I remember there being things on Wednesdays towards like 2007-ish called Inside the Light. What was that?
It started out as a character study of each character. So one character, and it started with Harley, of course, because by that point, people were calling the show Harley Light. like a day in the life of a character. It devolved into, into let's wrap up an important plot hole of a story that would take a week in one episode.
So it basically was like an episode focused on one character. Did it relate to their current story that was going on outside of that? Okay.
Yes. I forgot the Harley, because I remember seeing the Harley episode, but I forgot what it was around. They did have an episode about Reva's breast cancer at the time. Okay. If you know, I don't know if you saw my Twitter, I posted a scene where Kimberly J. Brown returned, who is currently Mara in our episodes, returned in 2006 Thanksgiving-ish, where she basically cussed everybody out about the current state of the family. And so around that time, Reva was diagnosed with breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And that around that time, there was an episode focused on Reva getting a mammogram and finding out that she was diagnosed with breast cancer and that sort of thing.
Okay.
Because
I remembered hearing about that, like Inside the Light, and I remember them saying it was Wednesdays, but I didn't know what it was. I was like, was it like a behind the scenes thing? Like, I didn't know exactly.
Yeah.
Like,
or it was Thursdays if you were if you're a day behind. Okay. But I think they fixed it at that point. They were like, okay, we're not going to do a day behind anymore. We're going to everybody gets the same feed. But two important episodes that I loved and I also hated, and one that I really hate. So let's start with the one that I loved and hated. Guiding Light did I'll call it a crossover with Marvel Comics.
I've seen this where Harley was a superhero.
Yeah, where she was a superhero called The Guiding Light, I think, or I forgot what it was called. But I like and hate the episode. I have a love-hate relationship with that episode. I'm not a huge like comic book person, but I kind of like the episode because I like how they did the art and everything like that. But I also am just like, what is this?
I saw some soap opera special that talked about that, and I was like, I'll be skipping that if I ever get to that part. Because One Tree Hill did an episode where all the girls became superheroes, and it's my least, I hate it so much, because it's not anything, it's not the show, it just isn't. And I don't like that when things change what the show is. Like, you tell me what you are, and I'll watch it. If I want to see something about superheroes, I'll watch something about superheroes. You can't just put one random episode in season 8 and make it like that. Like, no, stop.
Because it wasn't even like a dream or anything like that. It was just, oh, hey, Harley's a superhero now. And
yeah, I don't like that.
Yeah. The second one, we're going into a little bit of spoiler, actually a lot of bit of spoiler territory. But if you're aware that Jerry Verdorn was on One Life to Live.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why was because they were reduced around that time. They were, and it's budgetary reasons. Mm-hmm. They reduced a lot of the longtime characters to recurring status. When you reduce when you reduce an actor to recurring status, what does that do? Freeze them up.
Yeah.
Leaves them open. So yeah. I think Frank Valentini was the EP at the time at One Life to Live. I'm forgetting the timeline, and he was like, "Hey, you want to play Clint?" And then he leaves the show, and they kill Ross off. In one episode. And have his funeral in the same episode.
Oh my god.
And they blame it on Rick.
Really?
Yep. I hated this episode.
I don't like that. I don't like when a show, a soap opera specifically, kills off a long-running character and then they just like sweep it under the rug. Like, I was watching The Virus Story from GH from 2006, and I just felt like Tony was dead in two episodes. And
then,
And I was just like, what? I was like, he's been on since the 80s. How do you just do a character like that?
Like, yeah, Ross has been on since the 70s. 1979, 8 or 9, I want to say.
I just feel like it's very disrespectful. And
it was. It was very disrespectful.
Ugh. Well, thank you for explaining what Inside the Light was. Because it's been bugging me. And every time we like wrap it up, I'm like, damn it, I forgot to ask her again.
I believe they stopped it once, a little before they changed production models. Because, of course, the...
It sounded, from what I've ever heard about it, that it wasn't a fan favorite.
No, they could have done so much with it. Like, they could have just made it, like, they could have just kept it as a character study and we wouldn't have cared. Mm-hmm. But it just evolved into, like, or devolved into, like, let's wrap things up in one episode. And then, no, I didn't like that at all.
All right. Well, do you have anything else to add on these episodes?
These episodes? Nope. I can't wait to see more of Dinah.
Honestly, me too. Even though I don't like this whole like pretentious side of her, I'm interested to see what she does because she seems like she's gonna stir some things up.
Oh yes. I love Wendy Moniz.
And I guess you tweeted about it, but I haven't really officially said anything. So for the month of April, we are going to be specifically focused on Guiding Light. We're taking a break from Port Charles. So we're going to pick up with Poor Charles Tempted in the beginning of May. So it's going to be for about maybe 5 weeks, Guiding Light specific, on Sundays.
Right in April.
Yeah. So we'll get a little deeper into the year.
Mm-hmm.
Where was I going with this? Lost my train of thought. I guess that was just the announcement that we're going to be doing Guiding Light every weekend.
Yeah, so we'll be doing Guiding Light April. You can advertise that as such.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us for another week and a half worth of Guiding Light 1995. As always, you can find us on all the socials at Queers and Soaps. And until next week, have a great week. Bye.
Bye.